We are at the DWX conference again. It's been a year. It's been a year of hiatus. I had plenty of things to do, but I'm finally back with some new guests for you. And today I have, like always, a very special one. But this one is really special. And he's in front of me and he's making silly faces, so it's hard to remain cool. Siya Gassemi is here today. Hi, Siya.
Hi.
Hi. We know each other from many conferences here around in Germany. We've seen each other many times.
Plenty of times,
and each time it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Feels like always.
Feels like family to see
you. It does.
Yes. Last time I saw you, you were just moving back from Canada, and now you're in Hamburg, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So back to your roots?
Not to my roots, but back in Germany, yeah.
Tell us about your roots. Where do you come from?
Well, I was born in Iran. Mm-hmm. But we moved to Germany when I was like four. I think it was 1989-ish. When we moved to Germany, we kind of refuged. So it was like fun to see so many different places. I think it wasn't fun for my mom to leave everything behind and just start over again. But yeah, and then I've been in Germany since I was five. Mm-hmm. Grew up in Germany, and then last year I decided to just do a year or maybe forever abroad. I went to Canada. Well, they didn't want to keep me there, so I returned to Germany. No, it's always hard with immigration, right? And so yeah, I returned April 18, 2018.
Mm-hmm. We're glad to have you back.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad to be back. It's like the family. I miss the family so much.
I'm sure you did. So you grew up in Germany. Yeah. And did you study? How did you come to being a developer?
Yeah. This starts in Iran, way back in Iran.
When you were four?
When I was four, exactly. So when I was four, what we had was a C64 at home, right?
Oh, okay.
With a data set, actually. And I remember playing games on that C64. And I'm pretty sure there was also an Atari, not just a C64. It was a fun time. And what impressed me is like, I'm pressing a button and the guy on the TV moves, mm-hmm. right? There's something happening based on what I do. And this was like, this got me right into it. It was like, I want to do something like that, right? And my cousin, who lives in Netherlands, he also was very deep into software dev. He also liked it. So we're almost the same age. He's just 1 year older than me. So we both were totally into creating games. And we were playing a lot of games, right? But like back then, Super Nintendo, getting Mortal Kombat 3 and playing Mortal Kombat 3. One of the first things that we did is basically we took Mortal Kombat 3 on the PC. And we looked up for all the images that were part of the game, right? So one of the things that we did first is taking those images and making them like on a button press, the change from not kicking to kicking, mm-hmm. right? Which was very weird. It didn't look that good. We were seven. I was seven. He was eight. And this was the entry, mm-hmm. right? I tried to go to courses, like some trainings to learn, but it was always like, they didn't get me, right? Mm-hmm. So I stayed on it. I learned it all by my own growing up. You know how it is as a teenie. You always need money, right? So I started creating websites and PHP for different people to earn some money on the side so I could go out and drink. Yeah, basically spent a lot of time in PHP. That was good because the one thing that is good about PHP, I'm not a big PHP fan, but the good thing was it was a C-like syntax. Mm-hmm. So it was good for learning, right? So especially if you did a lot of BASIC or Pascal before that, it's good to get into C syntax. Mm-hmm. And since I was doing a lot of VB6 back then, at a certain point, I was like totally impressed by .NET and C Sharp. So I started learning C Sharp on my own. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And then from there on, I took it on. And then there was a changing, or there was a point in time in my life where I was like, are you going to study informatics? It's the only thing that you can study in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. Or are you going for a trainee? It's kind of a trainee. It's not an internship. It's the German Ausbildung. It's mm-hmm. a trainee okay. kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where am I going for that one?
Apprenticeship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right. So if I go for that one or if I go to the uni to, study, and I actually decided to do not either one of those.
Okay.
Right. To just go on with the knowledge that I built by myself and that I had. Because everyone that I was meeting who was at the uni came out of the uni and they were still behind my knowledge. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, where's the point? Just mm-hmm. to get a degree.
Okay.
I'm very radical when it comes to those kind of things because I don't think a piece of paper shows who you are, what you are. It's basically just to satisfy the need of some people mm-hmm. that they have something to prove. It makes sense in a lot of different occasions, right? Let's say you want to be a chemist or whatever. You don't have those machines at home. You can't do it, right? Sure. So you need to go to the U. But for devs, because you just need a computer. And back then, it wasn't that cheap, but it was also not that expensive, mm-hmm. right? So you could afford it. Yeah, it was affordable, exactly. So yeah, since I taught myself everything, I started looking up for jobs, right? Man, finding out what your salary expectations are, if you have never done this before, it's mm-hmm. like, it's crazy. And then you surf the web, try to find out, okay, what could you take as salaries? And then you see all those high salaries. And no one tells you that this is like the end line, right? So I started my first, applied at a few companies with those high salaries. I didn't get a job. But then there was a company, they were talking to me. They're like, okay, this is like the top that you get, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to start at something very low. I did that. I went to a company that was one of the worst companies I ever worked for. You know, not from, like, the devs were super cool, right? But the mentality and what they were selling and what they were doing was like so bad. I never want to go back down that road again.
And this was .NET.
They did some, yeah, they did .NET, but this was back then was .NET 1.0. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any SMTP clients, nothing, right? And they wanted to do mass newsletters, right?
Okay.
And there was .NET 1.1. Which was, I think, Visual Studio 2003 or something. Yeah, I think 2002 was 1.0 and 2003 was 1.1. Mm-hmm. I think at least.
Something like that.
Yeah. But the company was like, they were cheap. They didn't want to spend that money to get the update. So I had to write a full SMTP protocol on my own. Like fresh as an employee at a company, first time doing this professionally, and you have to write an SMTP client, right? So I wrote the SMTP client on my own, all in C#. And I was in a company doing PHP, so I had to help out here and then. It was fine. And after half a year, I got a better job offer in my hometown, Düsseldorf, so I changed to that one. This was a much cooler company. They were doing C# purely all the time. And they were creating a website where you can compare multiple car rentals. Mm-hmm. See, like, what is the cheapest? Back then it was like all starting over, right? And I was at that company for 4 months. And then I got a mail from the military service. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, you got to come in. And my employee back then was like, well, you're a nice guy, but you didn't make the probation line.
Okay.
Right? Because they had to be 9 months in the army and keep the position free. It was a small company, we were like three people, right? Mm-hmm. Like the CEO and two devs, and I was one of them. So they couldn't really afford it, which is fine. I'm still friends with them. I still meet with them. Go out for lunch. Great people. But back then they couldn't like afford it to keep me. Mm-hmm. So I was out of the job. I had 3 months until my military service starts. Mm-hmm. I had to find something. Okay. So I just called around. I took the phone book and looked up all the IT companies and called around. I was like, all the time, I was like, well, I'm looking for a job, but I'm only available for 3 months. It's hard to find a job only for 3 months as a dev, right? Because mm-hmm. everyone is like, you're in the middle of the project and you have to leave. Mm-hmm. Well, luckily, there was a company who took me in, but it took me a month to find them. And for that 1 month, I was working at a telecom booth selling phone contracts, which was silly. But I learned a lot about selling, which is great. Yeah, so I went with that company for 2 months. And then I went to military service, did my military service, the first 3 months at least. Because then I was thinking about going into German Bundeswehr, the military service, and be a dev there, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have their department for developers and everything. But what they told me is like, okay, you can be a dev, but it is there is a security check that takes 1.5 years. And during that time, would like you like to send you to Afghanistan because you speak the language. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no way. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I left the military service, got self-employed as a mm-hmm. freelancer. Mm-hmm. I had really good gigs and worked well until the financial crisis in 2009. Mm-hmm. And I went back to a permanent position, which was good because I was fresh, right? I didn't have that much experience. And that company that I then got involved with, I stayed there for 4 years. So it was one of the greatest companies that I've ever worked for. I think there was one thing that made this company so good. The CEO was a dev. He started this company. He started the product that he's selling. Right. So he was not so much driven by the economy and by growth, but more like by innovation, mm-hmm. which is great. And I learned a lot there. When I started in that company, they were doing Scrum. And the CEO went on winter break and he got back and he's like, I read a book. This is so good. We will do this. But what he did, this is so amazing. He changed the whole company to a Kanban approach. Wow. And not just the devs, but the whole company was doing a Kanban approach.
Okay.
And you know how it is. Everyone was first complaining. Yeah, why should we do this? What is so, so different? Why? Mm-hmm. But in the end, we could see after about 3 months, it was applied. Everyone was doing it and it worked, right? It Kanban worked the way it should work.
Mm-hmm. When do you think it worked there? Because it's a horror show story that you
exactly.
hear all the time.
I think the thing is what people try to do always is like, let's just take the development department and let them just do Kanban. Mm-hmm. But because he applied it on the whole company, like from the CEO, like from the tops down to support, mm-hmm. everyone was in that process. Mm-hmm. And the board, the Kanban boards were all the departments in there, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone was working on one board. And I think this is why it worked. And on the other hand, we also introduced feature branches mm-hmm. with quality gates, right? So the quality that they had back then was great because they had acceptance testing that was running in parallel for about 4 hours for every build. Mm-hmm. So the quality, the test quality was good and the code quality was really good. But what we did with the quality gates, the PO had to sign that he got delivered what he asked for. This made the PO rethink before he takes anything. Mm-hmm. And this brought us a better quality in not just code quality, but also like application logic or to return what is expected. Mm-hmm. Agile worked, mm-hmm. right? We could pivot much faster because PO looked at things mm-hmm. and reacted much, much faster. So overall, what this company did is like, they did everything right. They had an awesome product. They still have an awesome product. They're still around. And I learned so much from them. Really thankful for that. Yeah, and at one point I decided that I had enough, that I want to change. I want to see something else. So I switched. Oh, by the way, before I tell that, within the company, I switched from the C-sharp part. We were doing C-sharp and managed C++. Mm-hmm. I switched the departments to a Java department, to the Java department. So I did like for 2 years or so, I did Java. And then I decided it's time for a change. So I signed up with the direct competitor of that company. That one was, it was based on my hometown. That's why, right?
Okay.
The other one was like, I had every day 1.5 hours to work and 1.5 hours back, which is a lot.
Okay.
So yeah, I signed up with a competitor, but this was like, it was not fun. Working there was not fun. It was like being a code monkey,
okay.
Right? It's like, just do this, do that, whatever. And yeah, I didn't have much fun there. So I switched again to a company that was smaller and had a monopoly. I'm not sure how much I can tell about this company, so I won't.
Just give it away.
But one weird thing happened. A recruiter got in touch with me, and he was like, well, how is it? Are you happy and stuff? And I was like, no, I'm not really happy. Because the company was like really conservative. They were like, we only do things that we know is good. So they were doing WPF where everyone else was moving on, right? Mm-hmm. They were doing like, I had to do silly things. Convert a Delphi application into a WPF application. It's not something that I want to do. Honestly, not.
Mm-hmm.
When they pitched me, it sounded much more interesting. Mm-hmm. What they're going down and what they're doing. So I was talking to this recruiter and I was like, I'm not so happy. So look for new things for me. What I didn't know is that recruiter, that asshole, called my manager and told him that I'm looking for something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
Yeah, it is. And the manager came to me and he was like, you have to leave. Take your stuff and go. You're banned. So they banned me and fired me, right? And I was like, okay, what the heck? I've got nothing to lose. So I talked to a few recruiters, and they got me a job in Hamburg. This is when I moved to Hamburg. So I grew up in Düsseldorf. Yeah.
And you went back to self-employment at that point?
No, I didn't. I first got in a permanent position in Hamburg, where I started to grow, because this was the first time where I got in touch with the community. I had a hard time to find the community in Düsseldorf.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to meetup.com and other things, I found the community in Hamburg.
Mm-hmm.
And the position at one company was good. I started as a dev, as a .NET developer, but I improved a lot and I very fast got into a position of a team lead kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I was responsible for hiring, responsible for firing, was responsible for the architecture of the application, and from there on, I stayed with them about 2 years, and then I got self-employed.
Okay.
And yeah, I learned a lot there again, and I met a lot of people at the communities, right? So, great time.
Let me jump right there. I know you from your recent history as an MVP, as a very, very talkative guy on conferences, who like comes with one talk planned and ends up with being 5 or 6 times on stage during the conference. How did you make this move to learn this, to become this extrovert and this leading position in the industry? How did that come to
be? I think I've always been extroverted, not on the dev side. So I haven't done a lot of talks back then, but I've always been extroverted. I always had a very simple time. It was always very easy for me to find new people, to meet new people, find new friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's something, I think that's something that you have in you, right? There are people that are extroverted and there are people that are very introverted. Like my girlfriend, she doesn't have, for her, it's not that easy to find new friends. For me, it's like, I just go somewhere and meet people. I met new friends, right? I made new friends. But when it comes to the conference, so what happened is, this is funny. So I moved to Hamburg. I was looking for the community for some meetups, right? I ended up in a Microsoft meetup, and it turned out in the end that's the PaaS meetup. So it was all DBAs, SQL servers. I was like, fuck.
Platform as a service.
No, it's the PaaS. It's PaaS. It's a whole own community for SQL Server and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Right? They're doing like their own things. It's like, it's huge. It really is huge. Okay. It's all over the world and yeah, very well organized. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ended up at this meetup and I don't know who it was, but one thing that was super interesting to me, right? I never talked a lot to DBAs. There were DBAs. Come on, right? But one of the things that they showed me that I learned there is like they have to go to customers and they need to take their tools with them to customers. Mm-hmm. So what they said is they often have a hard time bringing in tools because it's a USB stick and they have all these permits and all these rules at their customers where they're not allowed to bring in foreign USB sticks and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So what they did, they created a PowerShell script, put it online, and at the customer's computer, they just needed a browser. Mm-hmm. Went to that, copied it, put it into a script file, and just run it. What it actually did, it didn't run a bunch of things. It instantiated like WinForms and created a whole application from that PowerShell script. So they have their tools with them.
Okay.
Which is crazy, right? But this is what people do. That's what devs do, right? Mm-hmm. That's what engineers do. They have a problem. They try to solve it with the things they have.
Cool.
Yeah. And this was pretty cool. So yeah. From there, I met the .NET user group in Hamburg, mm-hmm. Kiel and Sven and Martin. So I was there at my first meetup with them, and I got in touch with them, talked to them, and pretty much almost within the next meetup, I was part of the team, organized the team, right? And this is where I brought in my first own presentation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was on Swagger and Azure API apps and logic apps. And through that community, through that meetup, I got in touch with the Dev Open Space in Leipzig. Mm-hmm. So they asked me, hey, you want to go there? I was like, yeah, sure. And funny thing, the organizer of the Dev Open Space was looking for one more presenter, a workshop lead, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I can do that. I've never done a workshop before, but yeah, I can do that. So I did a workshop on logic apps, API apps, and Swagger. Mm-hmm. I remember when we arrived there, what we did is like we arrived, I think, Thursday night, went to to the next supermarket, got two bottles of Bacardi. I got super drunk. And the next day I had a hangover that was so bad. And I had to lead my first workshop and I had a hangover.
Right? Yeah, that's not really what they told us on the manual.
Exactly, right? But so yeah, so I had this workshop. I did the workshop and what happened is during the lunch break, I was like, guys, I'm still so hungover. I'm going to take a quick nap. So I had a nap for 30 minutes, take a shower, and then went on with the workshop. And then I got the feedback, papers back. You wouldn't believe it, but it said this was the most comfortable workshop. It was so, so relaxed because the lead was drunk.
Okay.
So, good experience. Yeah.
I'm sure it was.
For me, it was.
It could have been really bad, but it turned out okay.
Yeah. It was fine. And yeah, and then, day after that, it was the open space. So I did a talk on, Swagger, but this was the first time that something bad happened to me as a speaker. So there was this one guy who was like, I know everything about REST. I know everything about RESTful. And Swagger is not RESTful. It's not as shit because it doesn't support hypermedia and blah, blah, blah. Turned out in the end, so he was crushing my first ever talk in front of a bigger audience, mm-hmm. which was bad because I wasn't trained. I didn't know how to react. I was kind of lost, right? Mm-hmm. In the end, it turned out that this guy created GitHub issues and the team told him to just go and fuck himself. Because Swagger is not about being fully wrestled with hypermedia, mm-hmm. right? The goal is different. And he was pretty pissed about it. You can read it in GitHub issues. He was pretty pissed about it. And he took it to me. He took it out of me, right? Which is pretty bad. But others who are today my friends, who are part of the family, jumped in and helped me back then, which was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from there on, I just went to the next meetup and always higher expectations on myself. Let's do this. Let's do that talk. Let's do something on that. Find my specialties, Xamarin, Azure, got awarded as an Azure MVP, and yeah, just more and more and more, but not because I wanted to show myself or whatever. It is fun. It is. Doing talks in front of people and seeing their eyes like shine when they see something new. This is fun. This is like one of the best feelings there is, right? Teaching people. Oh, I love agree. That. Yeah. So that's why I do this and, why I take on as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. I keep on seeing the same faces at conferences. So one side is really fun. It's really fun to find the whole family. It really feels like family, but it's hard to get new people in there. Why do you think so few people are interested in public speaking?
I don't think it's not that people are not interested. Have you met Patrick Drexler?
Yes.
Yeah. So I talked to him. He was like, he was as an attendee here for 5 years, whatever. And it's the first time now he is here as a speaker this year. Right? Mm-hmm. So the thing is, I don't think it is. It is not because people are not interested. When I talk to people, it's more like they're intimidated, right? They're like, oh, this is something that only an expert can do. And what I tell them is like, it's not true. Usually what you have on conferences is very high level, right? Introduction into things. Take something that you're super interested in, that you're passionate in. Take that and go to a local meetup and just do it there. Nothing bad will happen. You won't get your head ripped off or anything, right? I think it's just more the fear about blaming yourself, mm-hmm. right? And that bad things will happen. It's like with everything that you're afraid of because you never did it before, right? And I think this is the problem that we need to help each other, mm-hmm. encourage each other to do things, right? Yesterday we had Lisa here. She had her first talk ever, and she's not from the dev side, right? She's from the HR side. She's coming from HR, and her talk was amazing. It was great. Mm-hmm. Sitting there listening to it. And the thing is why it was so good. So we have both seen good and bad talks, right? And I think one thing that makes a talk a good one or a session a good one is if you feel that the presenter is passionate about it, right? It has passion and they're not looking at their slides, but they're really talking out of their head because they know exactly out of the top of their head. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what they're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the thing when you have some presenter there that is doing it with comfort, you know, this is a good talk. You enjoy sitting there and listening. Mm-hmm. If you feel that people are not that comfortable, because it's like, you feel if it's a topic they just have to cover, but they're not really interested in, then the talk and the whole session is shitty.
Yeah. Are we doing enough as more experienced speakers in the industry? Yeah. Maybe we're the ones creating this impression that you have to be master of your tools before coming on stage. Are we doing enough? Could we do more than that?
I'm not sure if we could do more. It is, don't forget, whenever someone has to step out, it also means that he has to step out of his comfort zone, mm-hmm. right? So to encourage people to do that, we have to make clear that they don't have to be an expert on anything and they don't have to do something that no one else has done before. They can't do things that others have done. Because whenever I'm on stage and I'm presenting something, what I tell the people before I send them home is like, don't forget, I'm standing here. I'm telling you about my opinion. Mm-hmm. Right? This is just my opinion. There are so many different opinions out there. Go to each one of them. Listen to each one of them. Read books, but don't forget, it's always an opinion of one individual. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is something that we need to make clear. There's no wrong or right. Right or wrong. There's only opinions and there are patterns and concepts, right? So it's always refreshing to see the same topic from a different angle.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And I think this is what people are like, oh, someone already talked about that. Why should I do it again, right? And we need to educate each other to understand that multiple angles onto a topic are great because we only can learn from each other. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
This is why I'm not a big fan of books, because books outdate at a certain point, mm-hmm. especially in our industry, they outdate so fast. And on the other hand, if there's a book, people think this is the only truth.
This is established.
It's established. This is the only, yeah. especially if it's someone who has a name in the industry, you know that name. Oh, when he writes this, this is the right thing. Right. Yeah. And we always forget to question things, right? Yeah. And what can we do to encourage people? I don't know. Just give them comfort. Encourage them. Tell them, hey, come on, let's just do it. Mm-hmm. Nothing to lose. What I did with a friend of mine, I just took him as a co-author or co-speaker onto my sessions. Mm-hmm. He got more comfortable, right?
That is
worse. Now he's preparing his first own talk, right?
So, right. I had also I heard the advice. If you're following some kind of class or something, you had 100 hours invested, and now you can give a talk of 30 minutes, then you spared me 99.5 hours. You're still not a master. You're still not an expert, but
exactly.
You spared me that much time, and I have a bit of experience in this thing.
Exactly. I mean, like, when you go to my talks, you will see, even if I'm talking about the same topic or this the same talk, I change nothing on the slides, whatever. It always is different. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because I don't prepare. What I do is, like, I know the topic that I want to talk about. And this is something that I love and that I can talk about for hours, right? So when I go into the talk, I first ask the audience, what they know, what they don't know. Right. And depending on who my audience is, for some talks, I even have multiple slide decks to take out the one that is important for that audience. But on the other hand, it is not a monologue. I'm not standing there and holding a monologue. It is a dialogue. Even if the other side doesn't say much, you can see in their faces the expression, mm-hmm. right? You can read what they're thinking, not what they're thinking, but at least how they accepting what you're saying.
Are they getting it? Are they not
exactly.
getting it?
Exactly. And this is still a dialogue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the important part. You got to understand your audience. Sometimes you have really a bad audience and you can't do anything about it. They're just not interested. They're just there for the food. They have that a lot of meetups, right? Where you have a meetup and people just show up for the food and they're not really interested, which is disappointing and bad. But yeah, you can't always have the happy path and the good things, right? Mm. You gotta learn with your experiences.
True that. What's on your plate? Where are you going now? What's up with your journey?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I recently started to do more business consulting mm-hmm. and cloud consulting. So it's less about like, hey, this is a nice cloud, whatever. Look at this one and what we have here. It's more like I go to customers that are like, okay, this is what we're trying to build. This is our problems. There are multiple solutions to a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when people these days want to move into the cloud, right? They're like, we have a software here. We'll move into the cloud. One thing that I say always is like, yeah, you can spin up a bunch of VMs and run them there, right? But you don't win anything, mm-hmm. right? still have to manage the VMs and everything.
Yeah, there's lift and shift, but there's
exactly
the born in the cloud approach,
exactly,
which is totally different.
Yeah, and the hardest part is to convince companies to rebuild what they're doing with a cloud-first approach. Because rebuilding is always expensive.
It is.
I have something here that is running. So often you get this, hey, come in and tell us how we can move our application into the cloud or make it a use the microservice pattern, whatever. And it's always like, well, I wouldn't. Even if it is a monolithic application that you're running there, it's running. Let it run the way it is. Take a new project that you want, or a new feature, bigger feature that you want to implement. And from that point, implement it in a new architecture, new pattern. And once you have that, connect those two. Then you're moving towards distributed systems, as you use a lot of messaging and stuff. So that's something that's super interesting to me. Like, how can we change the mindset to today's needs? Right? When you look at today's requirements, we always want to have dedicated systems, distributed systems, right? And I think the biggest problem that we have today is that at unis and at the schools, we're still teaching monolithic applications, monolithic programming, asynchronous programming, right? Just do one thing at a time instead of teaching asynchronous and distributed systems. So this is on the one hand where I'm trying to go to meetups and pick out all the students, right? And lead them into the right direction, even though the university is going the wrong direction, right? On the other hand, I would love to do more business consulting. Less like, how do you grow or how do you get growth in your business? More like, do you understand your business so far? Right? This is where I got all in this, in all of these DDD stuff and all things around then, right? Domain-driven design, exactly. Domain-driven design and event sourcing and event storming as a practice to understand your business.
And how you get your business knowledge into software. So
exactly.
Still this bridge.
What this brings also with it is that we start teaching developers to speak business language instead of trying to teach business people to speak developer language, right?
Well, probably need a bit of both.
Yeah, it is. In the end, it's a meeting on both sides, right? But for a long, long time, people try to just educate PMs to make it very technical, to define their requirements very technical, which is bad, because this leads to a lot of confusion, a lot of misunderstanding, right? So, yeah, this is where I'm trying to get into more, which works for me so far. So since I'm back, I'm in a project where I can do exactly that, where the knowledge is something that the customer is paying for. The knowledge about building software instead of like hiring me just as a dev. And this is also why I'm attending on all these conferences too. To be fair, I love what we're doing, but it is on the other hand also a self-marketing tool, right? We all try to get new interesting projects where we can grow, right? So it's part of that too. So whenever I'm here at the conferences, try to meet new people, connect with new people, extend my network, right? And even go for free to a company to see how they're doing things, to understand what are the needs in the industry. Because it's the only way you can pivot at the right time, right?
That's true, that's true. So let's jump on that. Where can people find you? If they need somebody like you, or if they want to talk, to show you how they're working and give you a different insight, where can they grab you? Where can they find you?
There's one thing that I'm super, super, super bad at, that I suck at, is creating my own website.
We still have a LinkedIn profile or
there's a LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn, Xing, Twitter. Probably on Facebook you will find me, but don't look this one up. It's more private. And
but yeah, all of the links to the show, except the links, Facebook.
Exactly. No, but yeah. Yeah. Just best is to send me an email, or ping me on LinkedIn.
Okay. Are you at some conferences, in the next month that you want to?
Well, I am now. We have summer break. Okay. Yay. Summer break, right?
You're doing that?
Oh yeah. I'm doing a summer break in July and August, I think.
Okay.
Maybe I go to a meetup or not, but summer break on conferences at least. And I gotta ask Yannick because he's my booking agent. He knows exactly what conferences I'm going to, but there are a few that just pops up in my mind. It's the Kandinsky in October.
Mm-hmm. So it's Haps Campus in September?
No, you didn't pull my.
You didn't?
You didn't.
Oh, okay.
You remember?
No.
You told me last time.
Okay.
You didn't pull my. Yeah, it's fine. I applied a few different ones. So there's a Caribbean Dev Con.
Sounds great. Where do I apply?
Yeah, on Caribbean Dev Con. Okay. It really is in a Dominican Republic.
Cool.
Yeah, so Marco and I are applying for this one,
okay,
which would be right after Kandinsky. Mm. And then right after that one is FavorConf in Berlin.
Okay.
Right? So these are the ones that I have in mind. And then Kostia asked me to speak at the PASS Camp, which is in December. Mm-hmm. And I have a few other meetups that I'm attending at or speaking at. And I'm trying to find a lot of people to speak at my newly created English speaking developers community Hamburg.
Okay. Right. Well, how's that called?
Oh, we had our first meetup last week. Uh-huh. Isaac was presenting on the Safe Stack. It was great. People loved it. We had a no-show rate of 40%, which is pretty cool for a meetup, right? Yeah, it was really good. And yeah, I hope to get you there. The only requirements are...
Anytime.
So whenever someone wants to speak at our meetup, you're welcome. We're doing it once a month, third week of the month. There are only two requirements. It has to do somehow with the tech and dev community. It doesn't have to be like very technical. It can be a soft skill too. But it has to be in English.
I can do that.
I know that you can, but we're in Germany, yes, and there are still people who aren't that well in English.
I know. How's that called? How's the meetup called?
Oh, it's called English Speaking Developers Community Hamburg.
Okay. And do you have a website?
On meetup.com.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you should. Yeah. Smart move. Great. I'll link that to the show as well.
Yeah. Okay. I hope that at a certain point you will have English developer and then or English software developers, it's called, right? English software developers and then Community Hamburg. And we'll have Community Berlin, Community Munich, whatever. This is what I would like to have. Mm-hmm. Because the problem is, you know, we have our usual meetups and we always have, every now and then we have an English speaker. But you can see that usually the ones who are asking questions, if the talk is in German, stop ask questions if the talk is in English because they're intimidated and too afraid to say something wrong in English. And this is why I created this new meetup just to get people more comfortable.
That's a smart idea. Yeah. I see you're scaling already.
Oh yeah, I'm scaling so much.
That's good. That's cool. Well, do you want to say something more? I think you can wrap up.
Oh, I love you.
Oh, thank you very much.
I think whoever listens to their podcast and hasn't been at a conference like this, or even the smaller community conferences, right? I want to encourage them to go there as an attendee first, as a speaker, whatever, go there. Because as Timothy said in the first place, it is a family and meeting all these brilliant minds on each side is so refreshing and so good. And all the discussions we have are so much better than another Stack Flow thread where people are just fighting over religious things instead of just discussing and listening to each other. So go there and see it for yourself.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Well, see ya. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
It was a pleasure.